story, he smote a Moloch.
Yes, he did. It does.
So he says he smote a Moloch. Like,
so let's take a look at that. You want to take a look at that? It's a bit of a review. But okay, we can take a look at that. I was just looking at... we're good until Erev Pesach, more or less. I think... I don't know if we want to have a class on the 15th or not. That's like the week, the Monday before Pesach, probably not. So that probably means that we are we're looking at April 8th will be our last Monday class, and then after Pesach, I'm gone for 3 weeks till after Yom Ha'atzmaut for Chidon. So, but I'll send out notices, but. We'll kind of resume at the end of May when I get back. So yeah, it's going to be a long break. And anyway, what you were specifically referring to?
To page 342.
Yeah. Vayach Amalek mechavila boachah shua asher al pnei Mitzrayim. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Pasuk Zayin.
I'm on page 342, under Tet Vav. I guess you could start in Vav.
Right. So I had there was a part of my notes that I didn't get to because we ran out of time.
I know.
And that's an explanation of that pasuk. And it's a confusing pasuk because it seems to indicate that Shaul smote Amalek all the way down to Mitzrayim, which would seem to be all of Amalek, right? Except that if you go back to Pasuk Hey, it says Vevosh Ul Ad Ir Amalek. Now, Ir Amalek is a very strange concept because Amalek are nomads.
Right.
So why would you even... And to make it even more confusing is in a nomadic tribe structure, there's no melech. So one of the theories, and this is completely unrelated to my Shir and Shabbos, but it's just an interesting time, is that one of the theories behind why Shaul was mandated to attack Amalek at this particular moment. Why not 20 years earlier, or 50 years later, or 100 years earlier? Besides the fact that it was the first, that he had just solidified himself as king, and he had established himself as king, and you know there was all the army that he had built up, etc. And Amalek, there's a the way the Gemara describes it is that there are three mitzvot when you enter into the land of Israel, and they're sequential. The first is to appoint a king, the second is to just destroy Amalek, and the third is to build the Beit HaMikdash, but you have to have a king first. So that's one theory. But besides that, there was a theory that at this particular moment in time, Amalek was beginning to coalesce into some kind of organized structure beyond that of nomadic tribes. And you see that by the references to both an Ir Amalek, which is atypical of nomadic tribes, and a Melech. So, from that perspective, Shaul saw it as a political effort to stop that development, which is why he comes Ad Ir Amalek, and that's why he captures Agag, while the rest of Amalek is still wreaking havoc. So, from that perspective, Pasuk Hey, Vayavosh Ul Ad Ir Amalek Vayarav Benachal would support the theory that he doesn't destroy Amalek, he just conquers Amalek, captures the king and declares victory, right?
Yeah.
Except that you get to Pasuk Zayin, Vayach Shul Et Amalek Mechavila Bo Achashu Asher Apnei Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
Right? So, hold that Pasuk. Take a look at a Pasuk we just did. Perek Chaf Zayin, that's what we just did. Perek Chaf Zayin, Pasuk Chet.
That's 361.
Berak Chav Zayin Pasuk Chet 27:8, and that's a reference to David's campaign against Amalek. Now, no matter how you slice or dice the story of Shaul and Amalek, it's clear that Amalek survives because David is fighting Amalek. There's no way to deal with it otherwise. Okay, you unless you want to accept Rashi's interpretation that Amalek were magicians and they could turn themselves into animals and shapeshifters, I just the extent to which that is an extraordinary midrashic interpretation is only a reflection of how difficult the challenge is.
That's amazing that right? That was, you know, a midrash anyway.
It's really extraordinary.
There's nothing new under the sun.
That's right. So take a look at Pasuk Chet. Vayal David va'anashav vayivshatu el gshuri va'gizri va'amaleki. David and his people came up. They attacked. Remember, this is the ruse that he's attacking Amalek and he's attacking the nomadic tribes of gshuri and gizri rather than rather than Yehuda. Actually, this is a really good map. So if you want to just take a copy of this map, I have a copy of it. This is actually a better map than the one I gave you earlier. If you look at this map, you'll see Eretz Plishti. This is a map of Malchut Sha'ul. So you kind of get a sense of the whole region of Malchut Sha'ul. And you see Givat Sha'ul clearly marked in the right, just north of Yam HaMelech. Sheva Binyamin, Yevus Yerushalayim underneath it. Ki'ilah is there, Yehuda, Hebron. To the left of it, you have this jagged line. That's the more or less the boundary between Yehuda and Eretz Plishtim. And the big circled city of Gat is clearly marked there. Right. That's where David runs to. Mm-hmm. And Siklag, down south from between Gat and Beersheba. Mm-hmm. Everybody see that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, when David begins his raiding parties, he's telling Achish that he's raiding Negev HaKreti, v'Negev HaYerachmeli, v'Negev HaKeni. Those are Jewish Judean settlement areas. Negev referring to a hillside or a shoulder of mountain range, because the Jews lived in the mountains. And so you'll see Negev HaKreti is mentioned here, just beneath Tziklag. Right? You see that?
Yes.
Okay. And what's not on this map is Negev HaYerachmeli and Negev HaKeni, but they are more towards the center of Harei Yehuda, towards Yam HaMelech. They're not on this map, but that's where they are. And where he goes to attack David is Amaleg Shuri and Gizri. So if you look on this map, it's marked. Shuri and Gizri are tribes that live along the northern Sinai area. It's not on the map, but there's an arrow to which direction to find them.
Right.
Okay, down here.
Right.
Okay, along here. And Amalek is further down south. You see that marked?
The arrow's pointing down south.
Right? That's what I mean. Okay. But now look at the next pasuk. Pasukat. Vayal David v'anashav v'yivshetu l'gshuri v'agizri v'amaleki ki hena Yoshvot ha'aretz asher me'olam bo'acha shura v'yad eretz Mitzrayim. For they are the inhabitants of the area all the way down to Shur, which is down towards Mitzrayim. And you have Shur mentioned, listed on this map as well. Mm-hmm. So geographic identification of where Amalek lives, and all these tribes, they're living southwest along the northern ridge of Sinai towards Mitzrayim, Ad Bochashur, Eretz Mitzrayim, whereas David is here north of Tziklag, and instead of going into Eretz Yehuda, here's Beersheba, here's Tziklag more or less, instead of going into Eretz Yehuda to attack, he's heading down this way and then coming back. Just to give us a perspective. Okay? So now, again, I didn't do this on the page because I wasn't actually thinking about reviewing the story of Amalek, but might as well. Since it is Erev Purim, okay. Copy. If you're taking notes, you can do it on your notes. I'm going to do it on the board. Tet Vav, Pasuk, what is it, Zion?
I took my place out.
And Chav, Tet Vav Zion. And the Chav, whatever we just said.
Chet.
Chav Zayin. Chet. Okay, so let's just put them on the board. Tet Vav Zayin. Vayach.
Somebody read it.
Oh.
But yeah.
Sha'ul et Amalek.
Sha'ul et Amalek.
Mechavilah. Bo'acha Shur.
Bo'acha Shur.
Asher al Pnei Mitzrayim.
Asher al Pnei Mitzrayim. Okay? Now, Chav Zayin Chet.
Oh, wait, I just want to continue that. This is the other reason why I got the idea that he wiped them out. Malachai ve kol ha'am hecharim lefi cherev.
Yeah, that's probably... That doesn't bother me, because that's... Ir Amalek is that's the battle, right? If you fight against Ir Amalek, you capture the king. Ir Amalek, you destroy it, I have no doubt. Vayivo ad Ir Amalek.
This is ve kol ha'am.
Okay, good. So, you want to know the number of times it says with kol ha'am, and it means just the army that it was attacking?
Okay.
Like I said, you can work the optical illusion, but in the end you have to deal with the fact that Amalek is still a force to contend with for next year.
No, I know, but I'm just
so
saying, Pashah puts it in there like he wiped them out.
Yeah, well, clearly he didn't, right?
So wiped out a group of them.
Yes, a group of them, absolutely. Ir Amalek, he certainly conquered.
So you could say this was an exaggeration.
No, I'm not an exaggeration. Ir Amalek, that's a phraseology that we've dealt with many times.
Okay.
Kol Am, meaning the Amalochamim. I'm not bothered by that.
Okay.
But take a look at Pasuk. I'm much more bothered by this.
Okay.
Because this says, Ve'yachshu et Amalek, all of Amalek. Okay? The issue here is, Ve'yavo ad Ir Amalek, earlier, and now it says, Ve'yachshu et Amalek, Mechavila bo'achashu asher pnei Mitzrayim. It's a much more comprehensive piece. The Am is the Amalochamim. I'm not worried about that. Especially if you capture the king and you destroy the city.
That comes after this sentence, so it like reinforces the idea.
Correct, maybe, if that's what the sentence means.
Okay.
But now, read me Perek of Zayin Pasuk Chet.
I'll do it. Okay. Vayal David ba'anashav.
Right.
Vayifshatu et kshurei.
Kshuri.
Vehagizri.
Gizri.
Vehamaleki.
Vehamaleki.
Kihena
Yoshena.
Yoshvot ha'aretz
asher
ne'olam bo'acha shura
bo'acha shura
ba'ad eretz Mitzrayim.
Ba'ad eretz Mitzrayim. Let me see the similarity here.
The same
phrase.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. It's the same thing. It's the exact same phrase.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But they're not referring to the same thing. This description is what? Is this a description with of the depth of David's conquest? Is that a description of the depth of David's conquest?
No, I think it's more geographic
orientation of whom?
Of where the
Amalek
lived.
Where Amalek lived. If you look at the phrase, Ki heine yoshvot ha'aretz asher me'olam bo'acha shur miyad eretz Mitzrayim. This Amalek, where do they live? They are the Amalek that have been living in this land from Shur to
Eretz Mitzrayim.
South. Okay?
Yeah.
Vayach Sha'ul et Amalek Asher Mechavila Bo'acha Shur Asher Apnei Mitzrayim.
So how's that different? This is then happens, but what is the first part?
What I'm suggesting is that this is exactly the same terminology. Meaning the phrase here is not the depth of Sha'ul's conquest, it's the same description of Amalek. Anytime you reference Amalek, you need to know where Amalek is. Amalek is sitting mechavilah all the way down to Shur Pnei Mitzrayim. But that's not describing the depth of Shaul's conquest any more than this describes the depth of David's conquest. It tells us, it's exact same pasuk, exact same phrase twice. It's telling us where Shaul would find, where David found Amalek. They are sitting mi bocha shura ad eretz Mitzrayim. But the depth of the conquest is described here. Vayach vayavo Shaul ad Ir Amalek. Ad Ir Amalek. And not beyond.
Until.
Right? Because he saw it as a political campaign. Take out the king, take out the city, and you're done.
Right. So there's an army around the city. That's fine. That doesn't bother me. That's in contradistinction to the animals. The people, the animals they wanted to take for spoils of war. The people they destroyed. Which people? Not all of Amalek. The people they were fighting against, which is Ir Amalek. Because that's clearly what it says earlier. Right? But as far as Vayachshut Amalek is not the, this is not a description of how far the conquest went. This is a description of where Amalek lived. It's a question of what is that phrase modifying? The old dangling modifier mystery. Is it describing how far the Vayach, how far the conquest went, or where Amalek could be found? This phrase tells me that this is a phrase that the Navi uses to describe the location of Amalek. And hence that phrase doesn't bother me. Is that?
But how would they say if he had done what God wanted, how would that have been written? Vayach.
Oh, then it would have, would have had nothing to do with the Ir Amalek or the Melech. It just wouldn't have been mentioned. Then I would have gone back to the phrase that the Navi used, which was
in the beginning of that section. Shmuel,
Lech v'kitat Amalek v'charamtem et kol ashelo v'lo tachmol alav v'matah me'ish ad isham yolav v'yad yonek v'sho v'yad tzemi gamav v'yad chamor.
Then there would be nothing left of Amalek to fight against. Even David, who comes closer to destroying Amalek than any other king, days of Chizkiyahu is a pasuk in the Vayomer. In the days of Chizkiyahu, there's still Amalek dealing. Shimon has to deal with Amalek in the days of Chizkiyahu. So that's a couple of hundred years later.
Just shows you how hard it was to get rid of Amalek.
Because they're nomads. So, and nomadic, and nomads are very, because there's pockets of them everywhere. So you're going to deal with one tribe, you're not going to deal with all of them. That's a problem. That's why Shaul saw it as a political campaign to deal with Ir Amalek and Melech Agag, because now they're becoming more centralized into a particular location with a particular king. Shaul said, oh, that's why I've been told to fight Amalek. So he goes and he takes out the king and he takes out the, and he conquers the city. But that's not the problem. The problem is that you've got nomadic tribes living all the way down to Mitzrayim, and without fundamentally dealing with the eradication of the threat of Amalek all the way down to Mitzrayim, doesn't mean you have to kill every man, woman, and child. That we talked about. The morality phraseology, phraseology of the Torah to describe a campaign which is thorough and not for the purpose of taking captives and taking slaves, is a description of wipe them out, but it doesn't. It's a genocidal phrase, but not an intent. Now we talked about that in Yehoshua, talked about that a little bit in Yeshoftim, and that applies to Amalek too. Because the moment they declare a white flag, the war is over. That's the Rambam, who says that Amalek always has the right to declare a white flag and surrender, and then the war is over. So, but that's got to be the approach with all of Amalek, not just Ir Amalek. And this is the key phrase to reformulate this phrase. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This I didn't get to on Shabbos. This was like the next page of my notes. So I just ran out of time, but you are correct. All right? So if you missed the shiur on Shabbos, I apologize for the digression. It happens to be Erev Purim, so I figured it was an appropriate digression. If you want a review of it here, it is recorded and on the website when we dealt with Perek Tedvav of Shmuel Aleph, which wasn't so long ago, but it was. It wasn't this year. Okay? We good? That brings us to the beginning of our next parak. We've been dealing with the story of David in Gat and Ziklag and his raiding parties down south. The next series of chapters, we're going to start parak of Chet today. The next series of chapters is a complicated piece because
it's one story with multiple vantage points that flips back and forth. So Chav Chet, Chav Tet, Lamed, and Lamed Aleph. It's four chapters. It really starts with Chav Zayin. So Chav Zayin, Chav Chet, Chav Tet, Lamed, Lamed. It's five perakim.
Oh, I thought you just told us to read up to Lamed. Remember you gave us homework?
I thought I said to the end of the Sefer. But okay, it doesn't... we won't get to Lamed Aleph today, so that's all right.
It's all right.
You can read tonight, Jim.
All right.
We have time.
It's one major story. It's the end of Shaul. It's Shaul's last campaign and battle against the Plishtim. And there are multiple pieces to the story being told from different vantage points. David, Shaul, it goes back and forth. Not only does that part become complicated, but the prakim are out of chronological order. And I'll show you that today as to how we know the chapters are out of chronological order, which just adds to the challenge of both learning it in sequence and trying to figure out what was the chronological order in terms of and why the chapters are out of order. So we're going to start the story today. We're going to a couple of psukim, and then we're going to kind of glance through the overall picture. Perek Chav Chet, Pasuk Gimel. Why Pasuk Gimel? What happened to Aleph and Bet?
They were a continuation of the last
one. Right. If we're assuming, and this is the thesis that we're working with, that the chapter shifts, or the shifts in focus or subject, is a shift between Shaul's perspective and David's perspective, then chapter 27, which was David in Gat and Achish, that the first two verses of Perek Chav Chet are the end of that story, when it says, and we'll read them now, Vayhi bayamim ahem. In those days when the Plishtim gathered their army together to go and fight against Israel, placing David in the biggest moral dilemma of his career, which is
siding with the other son.
Right. He's declaring his loyalty to Achish, trying to fight Amalek and his allies in order to defend himself as if he's fighting against Israel in order to support that claim, hoping against hope that Achish will never go to war against Shaul, because then his loyalties will be tested in reality. And that's exactly what happens. Vayomer Achish al David, yadoa teda ki iti titzeh b'machamayit atav anashecha. We're going to war against Shaul, your former king. I'm assuming that you're coming with me. Vayomer David al Achish, lachen ata tedat asher yaseh avdecha. You shall know what your servant shall do.
It's very ambiguous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That is very ambiguous.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. Time will tell. You'll figure it out eventually. Very non-committal. Achish takes him at his word. Vayomer Achish al David, lachen shomer l'roshi asimcha kol hayamim. I'm going to make you my personal bodyguard. Okay, so he says, I trust you enough to make you my personal bodyguard. Achish took that as a yes. It's a very poetic, of course, you'll see how loyal I shall be, right? So Achish took that as a very...
That's an example of people hear what they want to hear.
That is true. But it also reflects the depth of David's challenge and dilemma.
Definitely.
Because here he's being forced to kind of play with words in order not to give away his position. That's a really extraordinarily difficult position for David, and to an extent, a very big Chilul Hashem. You know, if you think about it from the perspective of here's David, who's the future king of Israel, and you know, all of his loyalty to Israel and his everything that he represents, and from the Plishtim's perspective, or even from Israel's perspective, he's gone over to the other side. He's a traitor.
Him.
So it really is, even though. He is, it's all a ruse. We know it's a ruse.
But he really didn't have a choice.
He did not have a choice. But the Chilul Hashem factor is still real.
Yeah.
And it puts him in a very, very difficult dilemma. But all of that is David's perspective, and really, therefore, the end of Perek Chav Zayin. We now shift to Perek Chav Chet, which is a new perspective. Ushmuel met. ויספדו לו כל ישראל, ויקברוהו ברמה ובעירו, ושאול הסיר האבות ואת האדונים מן הארץ. Shmuel had died, had been eulogized by all of Israel, buried in Ramah. Shaul had removed all of the soothsayers and necromancers and whatever you call them, Avot and Yudonim, from the land. What is that all about? What relevance is all of that?
Yeah.
And then back to the story. Vayikavtsu plishtim v'yavo v'achenu b'shenem. The plishtim came and they encamped in Shunem. Vayikbots Shaul et kol Yisrael v'achenu b'Gilboa. And Shaul came and placed his camp in Gilboa. And I have a standoff between the armies of the Plishtim and the armies of Shaul. Vayar Shaul et machane Plishtim. Shaul saw the camp of the Plishtim. Vayira vayacharad libo me'od. He saw the Plishtim and he became greatly distressed, frightened. Vayishal Shaul b'Hashem v'lo anau Hashem. So he sought God's guidance. How do you seek God's guidance when you're the king? Either through a Navi or a Nun V'tumim. V'lo anau Hashem. And God did not answer Shaul. Didn't answer Shaul. We're going to look at this in much more depth in another future shiur, but on the face of it, it didn't answer him because
he's through with him.
He's been rejected. Mm-hmm. And Batumim is not responding to him, and the Nevi'im are not talking to him. And then the Nevi'im left, and Shmuel himself has died, and Avot V'Yudonim, which are a way of communicating with the dead, have been removed from the land by Shaul himself.
Shmuel, you mean?
No, Shaul.
Oh, by Shaul.
Well, so let's read Pasuk Gimel again. Read Pasuk Gimel again.
Yeah, it's funny. Why is that line over again?
Correct. So in an earlier Gilgal of Shaul's life, Shaul had fulfilled the mandate in the Torah, which was to remove all of the idolatrous nations on the land, including the black magic cults of the Avot and Yudonim. And he had done so. And Shmuel had died. Back in Perachav Hay, leave gam b'chalamot, gam back to the end of pasuk vav. Vayishal shu b'Hashem v'lo anau Hashem, gam b'chalamot, gam b'urim, gam b'neviim. Shaul was left without an answer from God, whether through dreams or through the Urim V'Tumim or through the prophets. He had no recourse by which to communicate with whom?
Hashem.
With Hashem, or in this case, a Navi. He has no Navi who will talk to him because Shmuel's gone. And the Avot and the Yudanim is an interesting issue because the Avot would at least give him the ability to communicate with the dead, at least he thinks so, and that would give him access to
Shmuel.
So at least he'd have some guidance from Shmuel. And therefore, we sort of have this introductory verse, which we will come back to, about the fact that all of his spiritual quote-unquote recourses have been silenced for him, both the Nevi'im and the Avot V'Yudanim, and right. So he has no one to talk to, no one to communicate. He doesn't totally know what's going to be, so he's going to find the solution. Yeah,
there's two questions. One is, there is communication with the dead through the there's such a thing?
So that is a good question.
Okay.
A valid question. Question that needs a shear into itself.
Okay.
And it's coming.
Okay.
It's on the curriculum.
My other question
is coming.
He only had one Navi, Shmuel.
Correct.
Okay.
Shmuel had disciples. So I assume that that's what it means by when it says that the Nevi'im didn't answer him. I assume it means like the Lakat Nevi'im, the disciples of Shmuel.
Okay.
He has no.
Right. So nobody's there.
There's nobody there. Okay. David has Nevi'im.
Right.
One of the Mepharshim actually say that he turned to the Nevi'im that go with David, Gad or Natan, and they're the ones who didn't answer him. Other Mepharshim say the references to the disciples of Shmuel who didn't answer him. In all cases, he's very isolated. He's isolated because he's been rejected by God, rejected by the Nevi'im. So of course he's isolated. Right? They don't hold. He doesn't have status in their eyes anymore. Be that as it may. And so he has no recourse, but he's desperately looking for an answer to what is going to happen in this campaign. Bakshuli eshet balat ov. Ve'elcha eleha ve'edusha ba. Find me some wife of a soothsayer. You know, a necromancer, or whatever these people are called. Find me somebody. Vayomu avadav elav, hine isha balat ov, eshet balat ov be'en dor. Okay, city of Endor, there's somebody from the ancient cult.
Bewitched.
Right, but of course Shaul is the one who killed all of the... Shaul is the one who killed them all, so he can't just run to her. So vayitchapes Shaul, vaybash pekadim acharim, vayelachu shnei nashim imo, vayavoh alai shalayla. So he disguises himself as an ordinary person, not as Shaul HaMelech, takes two people with him, and he goes to this woman in the middle of the night, vayomer, kasamina libaov. Samim are
magicians. Isn't Kesem magic?
Magic. This is
like
saying
black, magic.
Black. Whatever you do, whatever do your means. Stuff. Do your ov stuff. Vahalili et Hashem Ma'alecha, and conjure for me whoever I tell you. Obviously, he's not going to tell him who, because that would be a dead giveaway. Pardon the pun. Pun intended. Vatomer Aisha Elav. Ine ataya data tasher asa Shaul asher echlitet avot vayidonim min haaretz. Don't you know that this is forbidden activities, right? Shaul HaMelech had killed anybody who engaged in this kind of activity as he was supposed to. V'lama tamen makesh b'nafshi l'amiteni. You're threatening my life here. You're asking me to do something which would.
She obviously has no idea who he is.
Not yet.
He's disguised.
Yeah.
He's got a really good disguise.
Yeah.
For now. וישב על השאול בהשם למור חי השם אם יקרך אבון בדבר הזה. He takes an oath. I swear nobody will find out. Nothing will happen to you. I take an oath by the living God. Nothing will happen to you. Okay. ותאמר אישה תמי אעלה לך. So tell me, who do you want me to conjure? ויאמר את שמואל העלילי. I want you to bring me Shmuel. Vatera isha at Shmuel. So she sees Shmuel. Vatizak b'kol gadol. She cries out a great cry. Vatomer isha al Shaul lemor lama rimitani v'yata Shaul. What are you lying to me for? You are Shaul HaMelech. Disguise over. Vayomer la HaMelech Al tiri, don't be afraid. Kimara ita, what did you see? It's a not for today, but it's a remarkable play on words. Right? Al tiri, kimara it.
That's right.
Don't be afraid. What did you see? In English, you don't hear it, but in Hebrew, fear and he and see share the same letters. They're vocalized differently,
yeah.
But they share the same letters of the shoresh.
Right.
So al tiri, kimara it. Don't be afraid. What did you see? Right, in Hebrew, plays the lashon lefel lashon, plays the language here.
Mm-hmm.
Elohim, not meaning God, but power, authority, navi. I saw. Vayomer lamato aro, describe him to me. Vatomer ish zakenole, fu ote meil, old man, wearing a cloak. Vayeda shoki Shmuel. Shaul knew this was an authentic vision. He was really seeing Shmuel. Now Shmuel's response to Shaul. Okay. First time that they've communicated in I don't know how long. What are you bothering me for?
He's not happy.
He is not happy. What are you? Why have you angered me? Why have you disturbed me to bring me back here? Vayomer Shaul, tzar li ma'od. I am greatly distressed. Uf lishtim nilchamim bi. The plishtim are attacking me. Ve'elohim sar me'alai. God has abandoned me. We are right. Right. Who abandoned whom? But all right, God has abandoned me. V'lo anani od. He's not answering me. Gam b'yad ha-nevi'im, gam b'chalamot. I had no recourse. The Nevi'im aren't answering me. I'm not getting any answers through dreams. The Urim V'Tumim. All my normal, legitimate forms of communication have been shut down. So, v'ekru'alacha. Lo di ani ma'aseh, so I've called on you. You know, use the red hotline. Vayomer Shmuel v'lama tish'aleni v'Hashem sar mi'alecha v'hi arecha. Why did you bother calling me? If God has abandoned you, he's abandoned you. That's understandable. Vayas Hashem lo kasher diber biyadi. God has done to him as he had told me he would. Vayikra Hashem et hamamlacha miyadecha v'itna l'reacha l'David. He's torn the kingdom away from you to give it to David. So of course he's abandoned you. Why? Kasher lo shamata b'kol Hashem v'lo asita charon hapo ba'amalek. Because you did not do what he commanded you. You did not fulfill God's desire to pour out his wrath against Amalek. And so all of this is happening. We'll deal with this much later, but in the overall series of crimes of Shaul, I'm not sure that Amalek ranks number one. I would have put the murder of Novi or Kani maybe is number one. You know, pursuing David maybe is number two. But okay, Amalek has a role in the story. Vayten Hashem gam et Yisrael imcha, or amcha, Yisrael imcha biyad the plishtim. And God is going to hand the people over to the plishtim. They are going to be victorious. And the next three words are remarkable. Umacha ata uvanecha imi. And by tomorrow, you and your children are going to be with me. We're going to have a reunion. Then we can talk all you want. For eternity. Gamet machane Yisrael yiten Hashem biyad plishtim. And Israel is also going to be handed over to the plishtim. My dear Shaul, this is not a happy-go-lucky moment. His full height fell to the ground. It's Latin, one of the few times since he was anointed king that we've referenced to his height. Right? Remember that he's very tall. Yeah. Like his whole height is this powerful giant of a man just falls to the ground. Distressed, fear gripping him. Gam koch lo ayabo, with no strength. Ki lo achal lechem kol hayom v'chol halayla. He hadn't eaten anything all day and all night. Right? He's too busy between the campaign and the war and the worry about what's going to be and the seeking of a soothsayer and everything else. He hadn't eaten for 2 days. And so he literally collapses, faints. But the voice shal Shaul, v'atera ki nivhal ma'od. Then the woman comes to Shaul, sees that he's been distressed. Now, it's an interesting question, and I leave it as an open question. Does she know the conversation that just took place? I leave it as a very open question, because all she does is she goes over to him to like, Vatoma elav, hinei shama shivchatcha b'kolecha, v'asim nefshi b'chapi v'shma t'varecha shedibarta elai. Your servant has listened to you. I put my life in my hands. I've done what you've asked. Now you listen to me. Why don't you sit down and eat something? Have a bowl of soup. You should have some strength. You're going on a journey. Have some strength. Have some chicken soup. Have something. What are you haven't eaten for 2 days. You look terrible. It's like, you have to wonder if she heard the conversation, because her response is so like like, you'll forgive me, like the stereotypical Jewish mother whose son comes in from the field and he's like hasn't eaten for 2 days and looks terrible, kind of fatten you up, you know, have something to eat. Vayimain vayomer lo achal, he refused, I won't eat. Vayifritzuva avada v'gam aisha, the servants and the mother. And right, the mother, the this woman, right, they insisted. They kvetched at him a little bit. They insisted. So he listened. He got up and he sat down and he ate. She had a very wonderful calf ready for slaughter in the house. Vatimeher, vatizbacheu, she went, she slaughtered it, vatikach kemach, vatalash, and she took some flour, vatofeu matzot, and she baked a matzot. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the story of Avraham and Sarah by the Malachim, right? Okay. Vatagesh lifnei Shaul v'lifnei avadav, vayochelu, she fed them, they ate. Vayakumu vayachuba lailahu, they got up and they left, and you know, you kind of on a, and they lived happily ever after for about 12 hours. And it's an extraordinary story.
They use that word bimayin. That's when Yosef was bimayin,
right?
With Eshet Potifar.
Correct. But I made the question, you know, does she hear the whole conversation? Because the whole conversation was so dark. And then all she cares about is, you look terrible, you should eat something. I have to wonder what happened. But there's a lot of mysteries in this parak. The whole process of Eshet Ov, and what is she really doing, and is she really soothsaying, and is she, or seance, whatever they call it, and is Shmuel really coming back, and what's going on in this parak? It's really an extraordinary piece. We have a lot of work to do. Yes?
Sometimes you visualize like the character, the person who's dead, comes through the person, and that person doesn't know what's going on.
Like, again, it depends on how much legitimacy we put into the power of this Eshet Ov, Eshet Balat Ov. I'm going to come back. That's a whole subject to itself. It's a very famous Radak who identifies two different schools of thought in this issue, Gaonim and others, and back and forth, and we're gonna try, I'll pull it out. We'll read it together. It's really an extraordinary piece. But that's Perek Chof Chet. Now, clearly, we've shifted our focus from the world of David to the world of Shaul. And if you had to describe Shaul's emotional mindset at this moment, there's only one way to describe it.
Devastated.
Devastated and petrified.
He's scared, yeah.
Something about this campaign has really petrified him more than we've ever seen him before. Which we've seen him afraid. He was afraid when Ruach Hashem Sarameim Shaul, when the spirit of godliness left him, or when he was fighting with David, Ruach Ra'ah, this spirit of fear embraced him. By Goyat, the people were afraid. It says, Vayachatu Vayiru Ma'od, people were afraid. But this is the first time we've seen Shaul described as Vayira Vayacharad Libo Ma'od, that he himself was extraordinarily afraid of this campaign. This campaign frightened him in a way that previous engagements did not. And hence his desperation to go find Eshet Balat Ov. And so part of the question that we need to explore is, what is it about this campaign that has so disturbed him and frightened him, maybe even more so, like this is really, he's been fighting the Plishtim all his life, but maybe even more so than previous engagements, what is driving this fear? So that's sort of the overarching question that I want to begin our study of this parak with. But I also want to look at the sequence of events.
That they were going to be joining him, Shmuel.
Correct, but that's only after. The fear comes first. The fear comes the moment, right at the beginning. Pasuk, hey. Right. As soon as the campaign begins in Pasuk Dalet, Vayikatsu Plishtim Vayavo Vayechanu B'Shenem Vayikbot Shaul Et Ko Yisro Vayechanu B'Gilboa, Pasuk Dalet, right? Shenem and Gilboa, the two places where they're encamped. Vayar Shaul Et Machane Plishtim Vayira Vayacharad Libo Ma'od. He saw the camp of the Plishtim and he was devastated.
He's afraid.
What's driving that fear? This is long before he giving. That's what drives him to find the Eshet Balat Ov, because he's so afraid, and he's so desperate. Right? What's going on?
He must feel isolated to begin with.
He is, but there's something unique.
He must feel isolated to begin with. Yeah.
He's certainly isolated, but there's something unique about this moment than we've had in previous moments. So part of it is the fact that we are picking up a story in the middle. And the reason we're picking up in the middle is because, I alluded to this earlier, is that the chapters are out of sequence. And so we're missing pieces of the story. Now, There's no good explanation for that. Well, maybe there is, but we don't have enough information yet for an answer as to why they're out of order. But what I want to show you is where we have glimpses of the fact that they are out of order. So, for example, take a look at Perek Chaf Tet. Beginning of Perek Chaf Tet. Vayikbetzu plishtim et kol machanehem afeka. V'Yisrael chonim ba'ayin asher b'Yisrael. The Plishtim gathered their camp at Afek, and Israel has gathered their camp at the Ma'ayan, or the spring, of Emek Yisrael. This parak shifts our focus back to David, because it's here where the Sanei Plishtim ovim lemiot v'lalafim, right, the generals and the armies and the captains of the Plishtim are moving by the tens of thousands, well, hundreds and thousands. V'David v'anashav ovrim b'achonayim Achish. And David and his people are moving together with Achish. But do you remember why David went to Tziklag in the first place? Why did David ask to leave the Gat to move to Tziklag?
Because he didn't want to be in the underfoot of the Plishtim.
He didn't want to be in the underfoot of the Plishtim. Achish trusted him, but I'm not sure how much the people trusted him, right? Here you see it. V'yamru sarei plishtim, ma ivrim ele? So the sarei plishtim turned to Achish and they said, what are these Hebrews doing with us? V'yomer Achish al sarei plishtim, alo ze David, eved Shaul, melech Yisrael, asher haya iti ze yamim, o ze shanim, v'lo matzati bo meum v'yom naflo ad hayom hazeh. This is David, who used to be the servant of Shaul, king of Israel, who's been with me for years. And he's proven himself again and again. I have found nothing to doubt his loyalty. You know what, Achish, we don't trust him. Send him back. Send him home. We don't want him in this campaign. We don't want a fifth column. We don't want him attacking us and stabbing us in the back. Tell him that he's exempt from this campaign. You know what? He won't be satisfied. He won't be able to please his own master until he takes our own heads off. This is the same David about whom the girls of Israel were singing that David that Shaul smote thousands but David tens of thousands. How can you trust him? Achish turns to David and he says, you know what, David, truly I have no problems with you. I trust you. Tov b'inai, you are good in my eyes. You go out and you come with me in the camp. That's, you are my armor bearer, you're my protector. I have no reason to doubt you. I found nothing to question your loyalty from the day you came to me till today. But but my generals are not convinced. So you know what, David? Ata shuv v'lech b'shalom. Go home. Go back to Tziklag. I'm going to let you sit this one out. I need my generals. I can't fight this without them. They don't trust you. You know what? I trust you. You fulfilled your honor and your oath to me. Now go home. David What have I done? What question from the day that I came to you? Why is there any doubt? Did I not go and fight the enemies of the king? I want to stay, says David. I know you're good in my eyes. You're like an angel. But my generals don't feel that way. They say you're not coming with us. Tomorrow morning, you and all of your army and all of your people, go home. Okay. So the next morning, he and all of his people went back to Eretz Plishtim. Uflishtim alu Yisrael, and the Plishtim went up to Emek Yisrael. Wonderful little story. Again, all of these stories are shiurim to this and depth that has to be elaborated upon. But it resolves David's moral dilemma. Okay, this is how David gets out of his moral dilemma. He's swore an oath to defend Achish, even when Achish goes to fight against Shaul, and to his mazel, Achish let him off. He says, you fulfilled your oath, now go home. And that's what he does. And he goes back to Ziklag. Unfortunately, he finds when he got back to Ziklag that Ziklag had been raided by Amalek, and all of the women and children in Ziklag had been taken slaves to Amalek, by Amalek down to Mitzrayim, and now he's got to go fight a different battle. Okay, so that's Perek Lamed. We'll get there. But in the sequence of Perek Chavchet and Perek Chavtet, in the sequence of the Prakim, it's clear that Perek Chavtet is taking place before Perek Chavchet. The two Prakim are out of order. How do I know they're out of order?
Because you have a clay saver in here.
Meaning?
In Chavchet.
Clay saver, what does that mean?
I mean, basically, we're reading in Chavchet, because Suplishtim et kol machneim of K, v'Yisrael chanum, you got that as the intro, and then back here in Chavchet, you have something about the Plishtim gathering.
Okay, that's true. The gathering in both Prakim, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're out
so
of
I'm
order.
So I'm saying, no, but I'm saying, and Kofed right in the intro that we sort of skipped over because we went to Shmuel Met, but by Hebe, Nehem, Bazu, Plishim, Machnehem, Luktseva, Lechem, Yisrael. So it sort of tells you, like, that's where.
That's the beginning of the campaign is. But why is it out of order? Why can't Perachavchet take place first and then Perachavchet?
Usually there's a reason why they stick it somewhere else.
Yeah, it's geography. It's a simple matter of geography. In Perek Chaf Chet, story of Shaul and Eshet Balat Ov, yeah. Where are the Plishtim and where are Shaul's forces? In Perek Chaf Chet, where are the Plishtim and where are Shaul's forces?
Well, the Plishtim are in Shunam.
Correct. The Plishtim are in Shunam. And Mishael is in
Gilboa.
Correct. And Shaul is in Gilboa. And that's where the campaign will be. That's where Shaul will fight. If you take a look at Perek Lamed Aleph, Uflishtim nilchamim b'Yisrael, the war begins. Vayanusu anshei Yisrael mifnei plishtim, vayiplu chalalim b'har al-Gilboa. Shaul and his army fights the Plishtim in Har Gilboa. And Har Gilboa, or the valley beneath Har Gilboa, between Gilboa and Shunem, the right opposite hills opposite the same valley, right, that's exactly where this campaign takes place. So between Perek Chavchet and Perek Lamed Aleph, I have a direct connection. Perek Chavchet, the army is in Gilboa, the Plishtim are in Shunem. He goes to Eshet Baalat Ov because he's afraid. She tells him, Macharat Haiti, right, tomorrow you're with me. They go to battle in Har Gilboa, and Shaul dies. In the first three psukim of that parak, Shaul dies. Vayiplu chalalim b'har al-Gilboa, vayidbaku plishtim et Shaul, vayakup plishtim et Yonatan, vayichbad mechama, etc. Vayomer Shaul, that's the story of how Shaul dies, we'll read another time. Shaul dies there in Har Gilboa. So, they're in Gilboa and Shunem. Here's Gilboa.
Where's
Shunem? Shunem is just opposite. It's not on this map.
It's
actually
map.
Mentioned in...
Yishad HaShunamit.
Well, so there's this whole story of Yishad HaShunamit, but we know where Shunem is, more or less. We don't necessarily know where it is today. We have theories.
Yeah.
But it is mentioned as a city. Take a look in... Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Yud Tet. I meant to put this on a page, but I forgot, so you'll just have to flip to it.
Yehoshua what?
Yehoshua Yud Tet. Nachalat Shevet Yisachar, which means we are looking at Pasuk Yud Zayin. The boundary of this tribe of Yisachar. Vahigvulam Yisraela, Emek Israel, the valley, the Jezreel Valley, Emek Israel is the home of Shevet Yisachar, very important. And amongst the places there, Vaksulot veShunem. And a bunch of other places, Chafarayim, Rishion, Anacharat, a whole bunch of other cities, and not our issue for now. But the city of Shunem is in Emek Israel. And that's the tribal territory of Shevet Yisachar. Why it's relevant to Yisachar, we'll see in a moment. So clearly, if he's in Gilboa, this is Emek Israel. This is the Jezreel Valley. Mm-hmm. This is the most important strategic piece of land in the land of Israel.
Beit Shan's at the bottom.
Beit Shan is over here, which is Beit Shan is over here, because that's where they take Shaul's body to hang after he was killed. Emek Beit Shan. That's where the people of Yavesh Gilad go and save the body of Shaul. All of that's Paraklam and Aleph.
Also, Yonatan.
Yonatan dies. Yeah, Yonatan dies there too.
No, but I'm saying they brought both of them.
Yeah. So all of this is happening here. Emek Yisrael is the most important strategic strip of land in the land of Israel. We've talked about Emek Yisrael many times. Yoshua, Shoftim, every major battle in Sefer Shoftim is in Emek Yisrael. Gidon, Devar and Barak, Aram, later on in history, right? There's always Emek Yisrael because it's the only valley that links the Jordan Valley and the coast. Everything else is hills. And the only stretch of flat land, more or less, that links these two valleys, or these two flat areas where the Canaanites lived, is Emek Israel. The roads, the famous, we talked about the road system in Israel, are the two primary trade routes in Israel that go through the valleys. One is the coast. One right here, the coastal road, called Derech Eretz Plishtim, or Derech Hamel, Derech Hayam. And then this road here that goes through the Jordan Valley, referred to as
Derech
HaMelech.
Right, King's Highway.
Right. But there's no connection between them. Right? This one goes north-south, this one goes north-south. Right. There's no connection between them other than way up north, except for Emek Israel. This is where Yosef goes, where his brother Selim is a slave. Right? Emek Israel is the centerpiece of the most strategic and important piece of land in all of Israel, topographically. Right, this is where Sisera puts 900 chariots to protect this area, and Devar and Barak have to fight with him. Right, Gidon fights here against him, Megiddo, Devar and Barak. All of these battles, HaTavor, all of these battles are in Emek Israel. No surprise, here is Har Gilboa, and just north of it is Shunem. That's where the Plishtim are. Now look at the beginning of Perek Chaf Tet.
Vayik
betzu plishtim et kol machnehem afeka v'Yisrael chonim ba'ayin asher b'Yisrael. Where is Afek?
I was looking for that.
Right here. There's Afek.
What's there today? What would you say is there today?
Well, remember the Battle of Evin Ezer, which is where Shmuel fought the Plishtim. Okay? It's all this area of the coast. Here's Tel Dan. What's there today? I'd have to look up a Google map. But
it's still way south of
right.
But
what's there today is not my issue. My issue is here's the center of Eretz Plishtim. If the Plishtim want to attack Emek Israel, they've got to go north. Mm-hmm. So the first major encampment and first major place is in Afek, Perek Chaf Tet. At the end of Perek Chaf Tet, it says, last pasuk, after the whole conversation with David, Vayashkem David, hu v'neshav l'alecha babokal l'shuv l'eretz Plishtim, u Plishtim alu Yisrael. And the Plishtim go up to Yisrael. So this campaign, so chapter 28 is happening already by describing Shaul's fear when he sees the camp of the Plishtim in Shunem, mm-hmm. in Emek Yisrael. Chapter 29, when Achish lets David go home, is en route when they're back here in Afek.
Sorry, it's already happened.
So hence the two chapters are out of order.
So now the question is why?
So why?
The question of why? That's a question to be answered, but not today. Okay.
Everything is keep on coming back.
Yay. Yeah. Coming Most back. Of this is going to be next year, by the way. A long journey. See, take one of these maps. Okay. So this is a map of this campaign. It's called Mapat Milchemet HaGilboa. Right? This is the war of Har Gilboa. This is the map of the forces in this particular campaign that we're talking about. And if you look, you'll see that it starts, the dotted line,
broken line.
Broken line, thank you. The broken line is the Plishtim. The solid line is Shaul and his forces. Correct?
Yeah.
The broken line starts in Afek and heads north all the way up to Shunem. Right. The solid line starts in Givat Shaul, which is where Shaul's kingdom and palace and the seat of his malchus is, and goes all the way up to Yisrael, mm-hmm. Har Gilboa.
Yeah.
And then they face off in the valley between these two hill ridges. Har Gilboa in the south.
You can see where Ein Dor is then.
And you can see where Ein Dor is.
Right there.
It's north of Shunem.
North of
Shunem. North of
Shunem.
Yeah.
Towards the Kinneret.
So, there's a number of variables that we need to realize just in order to understand what's going on in the tactics, the war, and Shaul's mind. Okay. So one of the questions that, it's a simple question, is how do the Plishtim go from here to here? That's quite a journey. How do the Plishtim go from Eretz Plishtim all the way up to Emek Yisrael? By the way, it's not the first time. Shmuel's famous.
What they have?
A question of chariots, maybe, but it's not the first time. Don't forget, Eben Ezer is where Shmuel is where they fought the Plishtim the first time, and that's when they took the Mishkan, the Aron, out of Shiloh.
Right.
And they took it into the battle, and they lost the Aron, and yeah. Shiloh fell. Remember, that was here. You can see how close Eben Ezer is to Shiloh.
Yeah, but this is...
Okay. So now they've gone from Eben Ezer, and then Shmuel re-fights that same campaign, that same Eben Ezer, and retakes it. But now they've gone to Afek, and now they've gone all the way up to here into Emek Yisrael. So to realize, first of all, of how far north the Plishtim are able to go... can only be a reflection of what?
How strong they are.
How strong they are.
And how many
and how weak
are.
Shaul is. Oh. Mm. In theory, if in a strong Malchut Shaul, they should never have been able to get this far north. Take a look at the difference in these two maps. Okay? In this map, which is Malchut Shaul, Eretz Plishtim is down here. Mm-hmm. More or less that black line. Mm-hmm. Shaul has fought wars against all of the neighboring countries to expand the kingdom. You don't really see it on this map because you don't see the color. But all of this shaded area is Malchut Shaul in its heyday. Take a look at the end of Perek Yud Daled. In Shaul in his heyday, before his, let's call it his fall. Well, I don't like the word, but... first time Shaul fought the Plishtim? Anybody remember what it was? When that was?
Was that before he was king even?
No, that was Yavesh Gilad. First time he fought the Plishtim was right after he was anointed king. It was his first campaign as king, and it was called the Battle of Michmas. It's chapters 13 and 14. Mm-hmm. How did Milchemet Michmas end?
Not well.
Victory to whom?
To Plishtim. Wasn't that where he was
Yonatan.
Shmuel told him to wait and then he didn't wait.
Correct. In Gilgal.
People got nervous.
Correct.
And that.
That's what he had, a very small army
and
with no...
raining out of time.
Very small army with no swords and spears, and Yonatan attacks the Plishtim of the garrison and wipes out the garrison of the outpost, and then they attack on the campaign. And then, if you take a look at Perek Yedaleh, Pasuk Mem Vav, Vaya'al Shaul Me'acharei Plishtim, U'Plishtim Achulim Komam. Shaul went home, Plishtim went home. We call that the war that ends in a draw or stalemate. And at that point we have this kind of summary description, end of Perek Yudalev, chapter 14, summary description of Shaul's campaigns. He waged war surrounding with all of the nations surrounding him. Waged war against all of the different nations, Ammon, Edom, Tsova, Plishtim, all successful. Vayaschail, he was a warrior. Vayachat Amalek, he smelt Amalek. He did, at least Ir Amalek. Vayatzelet Yisro Miyad Shoseu, he saved Israel from the hands of their plunderers. Right, this is a major... So this summary of description of Shaul is a description of Shaul fighting all of these campaigns. Ammon, Moab, Tsova, in the north, all of this, and unite the kingdom. Shaul in his heyday was a force to contend with. There's no way Shaul in that campaign, in that kind of reach over the years, Shaul in his in a position of strength, the Plishtim could get all the way up to Emek Yisrael. But we're not dealing with Shaul in his heyday. We're dealing with Shaul in his weakest moment. And so in his weakest moment, suddenly the Plishtim not only gone into Afek, which is on the coast, but they've gone all the way into the heart of Emek Yisrael. If the Plishtim are in Emek Yisrael, they threaten to cut off. Right? They cut off the land
north
of Israel. Divide the north and south.
You have to remember, and this we're going to conclude, that the Plishtim live here on the coast. But they're not the only ones in the land of Israel besides Israel. Okay, you've got all the Plishtim and all the different Canaanite cultures that live along here, and even in the Jordan Valley, Emek Beit Shan, and other places, there are Canaanites. The Canaanites and the Plishtim share more in common than they do with the Israelites, because they're more or less culturally Canaanites. Even the Plishtim are culturally Canaanites. So they've got allies all through this region here, and comes down from the more like a pincer from the north, Sidon, which is the heart, the source of the culture of Canaan, into these two regions. And so as the weak, as Israel weakens, the Canaanites are uniting together with the Plishtim on the coast and the Canaanites on the in the Jordan Valley in an attempt to cut off Emek Yisrael. Mm. You cut off Emek Yisrael and you cut off all the northern tribes, Naphtali, Asher, Dan, Zvulun, part of Yisachar, from the southern tribes. What was true today was true then too. So this is the moment, the strongest moment we'll find the Plishtim in Sefer Shmuel, and the weakest moment we see Shaul. Now how did Shaul get so weak?
That old
that.
And tired.
Right? What?
That old and tired. He was too busy chasing David.
Yeah,
that
he was too busy chasing David. That there is more truth to that than
old.
Than old.
So we shall continue this piece of the story of Bezrat Hashem next week.